topes and everything. So they had all connect between this and all these other bunkers. They were connected by trench, and I'm gonna show you later in one place they call Spitzasta Stiena. From that place, a lot of people die from the snipers, and because sniper was like active all the time, because they see everything like all place, like all Sarajevo. Actually, they had like this.
Is it from this area here where the snipers were sniping people who were in the city?
Yeah, in the city, in Ščarsija, but even Sedrenik, where I live, like you couldn't go out from the house if it's like nice weather.
Mala Kula was more than just a frontline position. Its high vantage point made it a lethal asset for Serb forces, who used it to monitor and control large parts of Sarajevo. From here, snipers targeted civilian areas like Barčašija and Sedrinik, where families lived under constant threat, unable to safely leave their homes.
They fire from here, they fire with sniper. You can see how, like, every street, every corners, and they can just fire anybody. And a lot of people actually died. You know, my cousin also was shot, you know, from the sniper, and a lot of kids died, a lot of civilians, because all civilians was there, because then our lines was under this, you know, so we didn't have no line there, you know, like, no soldiers there.
For the people of Sarajevo, a sunny day was a source of fear. The snipers on Mala Kula and other hillsides turned clear weather into a deadly game. To venture outside was to risk one's life, with every step taken under the watchful eye of an enemy ready to shoot.
So you were explaining that right here in the center, this is where you had the snipers shooting here, and you were actually here during the war?
Yes, that's right. I was just living just behind in this neighborhood, and during the war, we were surrounded. Chetniks were on these mountains. They were shooting snipers, so we have to hide from the shells and from the snipers. So as you can see, it's very close now. You can literally now see it.
So anyone who was down there, he would go ahead and if you're in the bread line, if you're going to...
You come out from the house, whatever, you know.
They'll take you out.
Okay, they always was like whatever is like street, like how you call like... how you call like 2-3 streets connect together, you know, like... They always watch those places,
intersections.
So you have to pass through there. So you have to like cover yourself behind the walls or house and run to pass, you know.
This is where you, if you see the map of Sarajevo being surrounded, this is the run area that they had tanks and... Or...
No. This was like only like people, you know, like tranche with the bunkers.
This is what...
With the bunkers, yes. Here was like actually bunkers and like... couple, not even maybe 200 feet, was our bunkers.
And they were just from here, they were targeting the city.
From here? Of course.
Here, home.
From here, from here, from anywhere.
For Sarajevo civilians, weekends brought a heightened terror. The weekend fighters, foreigners who traveled to Sarajevo to hunt, turned these days into a ritual of fear. They came not for war, but for sport, adding a new level of unpredictability to an already nightmarish existence.
You've heard of the safari hunting that they did?
Yeah.
Is that from areas like this?
But that's actually, that's actually like in weekend time, some people come and use these snipers, like people probably who paid or something, because sometimes we heard somebody came from Romania or from some girls also was there in sniper, and they shoot all the time.
You know? So explain that. So people, because safari hunting is where you go to Africa and you shoot animals, but these are not animals. These are innocent human beings.
Yeah.
So you had people coming from, you just said Romania and other countries.
From Russia, from some other place.
So they would come here to actually...
spend weekend time, you know, like
they
weekend.
Pay, this is... Okay.
Probably they pay or maybe they come, because we call them like weekend fighters. Because when it's weekend time, was really rough to live in a neighborhood because they shoot all the time. Yeah. After weekend was a little slow.
For those captured, survival was stripped to its rawest form. Men, women, and children were herded into camps hastily built from abandoned barns and livestock pens. Places never meant to hold human life. These concentration camps, they were forced to clear out cow stalls, adding fences and walls to the very places that would cage them. Inside, food was scarce. Water was even scarcer. Torture, both physical and psychological, became routine. The guards demanded confessions, loyalty, answers to questions that had no right answer. Every day became a test of endurance. That lies hung in the balance under the watchful eyes of captors who saw them as less than human. It was a calculated cruelty that left countless scars, visible and unseen, on those who survived and on the memory of a nation.
We were captured there for a certain time, and then we were traveling back and forth to the mountains called Manyacha. That's where we actually, as like around 200 of us that were captured prisoners as civilians, basically, you know, we were established. There was actually the barns, cow barns. We were cleaning up all
cow barns.
Cow barns. There was nine of them. Each one was holding about 800 people in there. So we clean up all the debris from the cows, and we actually made ourselves living place for us. You know, we didn't really know that's exactly what's going to happen to us. But when we start putting up the fence around, then we realize that that's actually our home is going to be for a while.
So they used you to make the concentration camp.
Yep.
You and the other.
Yes. Me and other 50 people, actually.
And what was this concentration camp?
Manyacha.
Manyacha.
Yes.
Was this one of the larger?
Yeah. That one of the first one established. So after that.
So you helped to establish one of the first concentration camps that you would actually be in.
Yes. Without my knowledge. Know that that's what's going to be, actually that's how I ended up. By the time when I was captured, I was never actually interested in any of those politics. Yes. You know, I was just a young teenager, basically, can say. So I didn't know. At the time, there was a voting. You know, our president became more independent, our country became independent. So even I didn't have no rights because of the age to vote.
Yes.
You know, when I was captured, you know, they were torturing all of us.
Torturing,
basically. And they were forcing, you know, who you voted for, what you voted for. And everybody said that they did not vote for Ali Izetbegovic. And everybody got, at the end, they got beaten up and all tortured, you know. And I said, well, I'm going to say the different thing. Even if I didn't even vote. I said, yes, I voted for her, as they are, basically. That's our leader, you know, campaign name it was. You know, Arnda said, oh, we like you. When you actually admit that you were, even I didn't. I said, maybe I'll get a different treatment. Yeah. But no, actually, I ended up like everybody else. When you mentioned at the beginning, those concentrating camps, you know, a lot of people were killed, actual killed. You know, my father-in-law, I don't want to mention his name, he was on the list to be wiped out. That was actually one building called White House, Biela Kuća. There was whoever was in that building is meant to be, you know, killed and wiped off the next day. So he had a luck. By law, you know, he ended up, you know, paid. He knew the guy who was security at outside the door. So he had some money on him. He tell him that he's got money, some if he could make happen. So he can just run across the road into another building so you don't end up killed.
How did you get out of this concentration camp?
Well, you know, suddenly at the end of it, you know, the United Nations found us, registered us as a prisoners. So when they registered us, basically we were protected. And literally a few months after that, I would say like 3 months after we were registered as a prisoners, you know, we were released. I was released in December 13th, 1992.
After July 11, 1995, Srebrenica became a name the world would remember, a symbol of the darkest depths of the genocide in Bosnia. 8,000 at least were killed in cold blood, and we're still counting more to this very day. But it was only one chapter in a much larger story. As the war came to an end, Bosnia revealed its hidden scars beneath the soil of quiet towns and peaceful valleys. Mass graves lay buried, silent witnesses to an unspeakable horror. In Prijedor, where families once farmed the land and children played, graves filled with hundreds of bodies were uncovered, each one telling a story of innocence stolen. Prijedor became one of the largest sites of mass graves, a place where entire families vanished, leaving behind only memories and names. Moving east side to Vlasenica, another town left forever changed. The soil yielded its own secrets. Here in the hills and forests, hundreds of Bosnians were led to their deaths. Men and boys separated from their loved ones, only to be buried in shallow, unmarked pits. The survivors, often too afraid to speak, waited for years to bring these truths to light, hoping to finally honor those they lost. In the town of Fucha, nestled by the Drina River, women and children were torn from their homes, many never to return. Graves in Fucha unearthed the remains of civilians taken during raids on their villages, targeted solely for who they were. Pain of Fucha is felt through its silence, a community left hollow by the loss of its own. And then there was Tomasica, near the town of Prijedor. It would become one of Bosnia's largest mass grave sites. When unearthed, Tomasica revealed hundreds of bodies piled together in a pit, brutal testament to the lengths of this atrocity. Each exhumed body was a reminder of how deeply Bosnia's people suffered. Across Bosnia, from Zvornik to Sanski Most, the soil bore witness to stories that had been hidden, places that only knew life now marked by death. These graves were not just remnants of past atrocities. They were evidence woven into the landscape of a genocide that touched nearly every corner of this land.
You're saying one of the biggest concentration camps. Many people just think about an isolated Srebrenica, but yes, the genocide wasn't just there. It happened in the entire Bosnia.
Actually, when you look at it even more, Srebrenica was one of the basically first shot, because they were surrounded and kind of in a safe zone, and they were killed, lots of them killed in such a few days, basically. You know, they were promised, they were in they were surrounded, and they were, you know, under protection with the United Nations, but that's why it's everything, you know, Srebrenica is named. But when you look at it, you know, if you try to search for some more details regarding Prijedor and surrounding villages, you know, what happened there, it was actually more people that were killed, more than actual Srebrenica. But
more people were killed than Srebrenica.
Yes.
What the politics is trying to convince everybody is, as you said, to localize the genocide as if it was just committed in Srebrenica. However, the mass graves that they found after the wars, one of the biggest ones was 270 kilometers away from Srebrenica, actually near the town of Prijedor. This mass grave is called Tomasica, which basically annihilates all those claims that the genocide only took place in Srebrenica.
For the Bosnians, survival was more than just endurance. It was a stand for faith, family, and freedom. In the face of annihilation, they looked to Islam, drawing strength from their faith to defend what they held sacred. But they also knew that faith alone could not protect them. The tragedy of Srebrenica was a harsh reminder of this truth, where thousands were left defenseless, unable to protect their lives because they lacked the means to fight back. Across Bosnia, others resolved to make a different choice, knowing that freedom would come with a price. Armed with a belief stronger than fear, they chose to stand in resistance, to pay that price for a future where they could live with dignity. For them, a life surrendered was no life at all.
As our late President Ali Izetbegović said, better grave than a slave. You have to fight for your freedom. You have to be ready to die. So people here understand that. They are ready to die. You have to sacrifice. You have to stand up. You have to fight. During the war, the culture of recognizing the martyrs was big. So you cannot just expect mercy from these people. The Srebrenica of genocide is an example. When we gave up our weapons for the security by Dutch forces, they were the ones who were first one to hand us to the slaughter. So,
and then they went to party.
That's right. And so here we had nothing. We didn't have anything, but we stood up what we had. In my street, we had one gun and one Kalashnikov in the whole street. And every night we were changing the shifts. I would take a guns and do the shift, and then I would give it to another person. Then my brother from somewhere bought two grenades, you know. So we didn't have anything, you know. They had everything.
In the face of overwhelming force, Bosnians began to organize. They took up whatever they could find, from makeshift weapons to scavenged firearms. It was an unequal fight at first. People defending their homes and families against heavily armed forces. But the Bosnians knew that unity was their greatest strength, along with their faith. And they came together, forming lines of defense, sharing resources, and slowly gaining ground. What started as a struggle to survive grew into a coordinated resistance. And as they took weapons from those they defeated, they began to level the playing field.
You know what's interesting? We as Muslims, we don't fear the war. We don't fear them. When we had nothing, when we weren't even ready, we survived. I remember walking these streets, bombs all falling on, you just get used to it. Now most of the Muslims, they feel like we have things, we can defend ourselves, we are not afraid of them, you know. So it's the, what will be the next generation? Will they understand? People here have experience in war. They know how to defend themselves. What about next of you? You know, when the war started, a couple of my relatives from this side of the town, they gathered some weapons, they took some uniforms, and they went to the road here. And just they started walking, and the Serb soldiers were looking at the Muslims. And with a few guns, few green uniforms, they called themselves Green Berets. They got scared. So a couple of tanks started rolling down. They just shoot one. They just throw petrol on one, and they run away. So in reality, they are very much cowards. That's why they were always just shooting from behind. They went to the unarmed villages. They waited until the Srebrenica was totally empty from their weapons so that they can attack.
He had like bunkers, okay? Now you're going to see. And behind these bunkers, they had trench. This is trench. You see, now he's like... not really deep trench, but used to be really deep trench. So when he walked, you cannot see his head. Even so now from this trench, he going back and he again has the bunkers. So if you move him from here, they just move and they have like second line. Gdje si bio ovdje? Gdje je bio?
Na prvim rogu, konjušnica, zvana konjušnica. Tu sam bio, ja. bio tu dvije godine, pa sam prebačen dolje u Panju Kulu i dalje to je išlo dalje, pa tereni, pa svašta nešta to.
Jel tako kad se napadala Mala Kula, ovdje se išlo
I vamo s kamena na kamen i...
Išlo se više s one strane, znaš, tamo...
Kontrasna, gdje je Klinčević poginuo.
Yes.
To mi je od druga, ja sa njegovim sinom sam...
Klinčević poginuo na lice mjesta, Šaban Šipkar, on je ranjen, teško bio, svega ga skuliš.
Jedač.
To ko si, on je mlaka zonca nanijeli po boru na tom, znaš.
Ja, ja, ja.
Nije mogla, bili smo i uzeli kulu.
Jes, prvi put.
Ja, ali nisu.
Mogu ogosta, praga gađala. Da...
A evo, vam ovu livadu su izrobilo, volam, tenkovi dolazili tu, su joj isprobijali.
Ja, when was took over us, the tank come right there, and Praga also, and they just destroy everything, you know, from the back. They couldn't stay there.
The genocide in Bosnia reverberated far beyond its borders. Across the world, Muslims saw the suffering of their brothers and sisters and felt a deep, unshakable calling to help.
Just one point, you know, in the Ukraine war, just to kind of give context, you had people who were coming from UK, from all over the world.
Exactly.
And there was getting a lot of media attention. They were going to Ukraine to go ahead and fight the what they consider the occupying forces. So to give context, these people, for the sake of God, for the sake of their creator, to go and defend innocent human beings, they were also coming from different lands here to Bosnia. And that's where we're just defining the term, because you're saying the Mujahideen, so people can get a, who've never, because this word has been associated with a lot of different things. So just to give the right connotation. Yeah.
That's a great point. That's a great point, because they were not doing anything different that, than what people are doing today in Ukraine.
They were quiet, sitting for, you know, probably hour or two. And from one time, all this line was attacked from us. So they start to fire with LPG, you know, and all the stuff right here.
On this monument, they have written the ayah from the Quran, where Allah says, do not think that those who died on the way of their Lord are dead. No, they are alive there with their Lord, from Surah Al Imran, 169.
So this is all like from 92, 95, all people die, is all soldiers, so you can find some Serbs also, which one was in our brigade. So Lara, you can see like some of them born 72, 93, and 72, even 73. So they were maybe 20 years old, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. So I see a lot of people.
The idea of Ummah, the unity of all Muslims, regardless of race, language, or nationality, came to life as volunteers and fighters from across the globe traveled to Bosnia. They came with a single purpose, to defend the people facing annihilation. This was more than a war. It was a duty of solidarity, of faith, and a shared humanity.
So here, this is the map. So you have, this is Bosnia, and then you have people coming from all over, they're showing to come answer the cries, like was said, that people's homes were lit on fire. You had their sons killed, their women raped. So people were hearing these cries, and look at the arrows from all these different areas and parts. They were coming to help them to defend and to stop this oppression, genocide that was happening here.
Initially, these fighters operated independently, but soon, where they fought in some of the fiercest battles.
So you asked him, how does he feel when he comes here?
Yeah, because Semin was one of the people who were fighting in the war in this unit that we are talking about, and I asked him how he felt. He said sometimes, of course, emotional, but he's talking about the people who are buried here. He says those kinds of people actually hardly don't even exist on the planet anymore. The ones who are willing to give their lives and everything they have for the idea of Islam and to protect the Muslims and to fight in the cause of Allah. Because they came here with everything and they lost it. They came with their lives, with their money, and they gave everything up for the sake of Allah. And this is, wallahi, this is a special place. Because when you look around, There's not even a name written on the grave.
Yeah, if you notice, there's no names. The other ones had names. If you look down, if you look over here
at the gravestones.
The gravestones, they don't have any names, nothing.
Someone made a good point that these people who died in the sake of Allah, even while dead, they are doing dawah, because they wanted to be buried according to the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. As he said, don't leave a grave except to level it and not be tall. I'm not sure how the hadith goes.
It's about a handspan, so it...
Yeah, exactly. So they are doing dawah even while dead, showing the people how Muslims should be buried. After they died.
We're seeing that right here. We're witnessing it. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So he set it off.
Yeah.
We are here in Osman Rejoice Medresa.
You said Osman Rejoice.
Osman Rejoice. Yes.
Same last name as mine.
Yes, yes. This your cousin.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yes, he come from Rudo. He come from Chinese. Here. Before 150 Osman, years, Osman Rejoice, Osman Efendi, he was Hoja. He was Efendi Hoja.
Yes,
he was Hoja, and he found that idea here. But who make this is Jamal Salispaich, one very very educated guy, one man. Now he has now 90 years.
Yes. Bosnia's Muslim identity became a focal point of attack, fueled by nationalistic ideologies determined to rewrite its history and erase its people. The conflict was not just about territory, it was about erasing identity, targeting a culture, and shattering a coexistence that once thrived.
And, or was it about faith? The war.
Ilzbog vjere, ilzbog zemlje. Ilzbog zemlje ili zbog vjere.
Mislim više vjera je. Vjera je u pitanju.
It's religion.
So, a zbog zemlje, to dobro, to je ovaj radoznalost i taj uglavnom.
Yes, and mainly because of religion.
Te ideje su manje više uzrok i posljedica vjere. Islama, ideja kršćanstva, ideja ova ili ona i tako dalje to su.
Our book is witness for us that Allah mentioned to us that the mushriks will never be our friends, right? So we all know that, and that's exactly what happened here. So all this non-Muslim, they tried to attack us, wiped us off, you know, from this.
So would you say, is it because of your religion, because you're Muslim?
That's the main reason.
It's about acceptance of the other, and or refusal to live with the other, to share the land, to share the country. And unfortunately, in the late 80s and early 90s, especially from Belgrade, the idea of exclusive, either Yugoslavia dominated by Serbs or Greater Serbia encompassing most Serbs and controlling the rest, should be the way forward. So since the first option was refused by especially Slovenes, Croats, Bosniaks, Macedonians, practically everyone, then the second option was to carve out Greater Serbia from Yugoslavia, and that wasn't possible without war, so there was violence.
Hate speech against Muslims isn't just spreading, it's becoming normalized. Across towns and cities, the venom of bigotry echoes in chants and songs, fueling division and inciting violence. These messages aren't just words, they're a rallying cry for those who seek to dehumanize, isolate, and erase a people. The scars of Bosnia's past remind us that such rhetoric, if unchecked, can quickly escalate into unspeakable tragedy. Words have power, and here they were weaponized.
So obviously he is talking in the proud of his father, who is a war criminal.
I mean, this is pretty much hate speech. I mean, this is pretty much incite. What do you take from this? What can the average person, like, when they listen to this, and it's disturbing when you see the comments? Mm. There's nobody really condemning this. It's like, even for other people from other countries, like, right on.
That this could happen. We, in this country, we don't say, will that happen? We just say, where it's going to happen next.
That song has 2.5 million views on YouTube. Now, this tells us, first of all, I think it's a good idea that you can't deny obvious, like, Holocaust. What is worrying, and that is really worrying, is that, unfortunately, the same doesn't apply to the genocide in Srebrenica and other war crimes in the 90s. It's, yes, Karadzic and Mladic might be rotting somewhere in the prisons, but obviously you have very young people here who not just deny what UN courts repeatedly, not one court, not once, but repeatedly have judged to have has happened as genocide, ethnic cleansing, you know, crimes against humanity, and so on. They are not just denying it; they are actually celebrating it, as we can hear. And that's really something that worries us all, and should make us very serious about this. And we should be doing something about it.
Throughout history, Muslims have faced persecution for their beliefs, their identity, and their resilience. In Bosnia, they were targeted not for what they had done, but for who they were. Today, in places like Gaza, we see echoes of the same story. Civilians under siege, homes destroyed, lives uprooted, all because they refuse to surrender their identity. This is a reminder that the struggle for justice and dignity transcends borders, and the responsibility to stand against oppression belongs to all of us.
Can you draw a parallel between what's happening in Gaza and now what's happened in Bosnia, and what do we learn from that? The takeaways.
Yeah. There are similarities and dissimilarities. Some of the similarities are this, what do you call it, supremacism. The feeling of one group that they are, you know,
superior
to the other group, and then denying the other group all types of rights, from identity to, you know, to basically right to live. So that's, I think, a major similarity. There are similarities actually in brutality. Although, if you just look at the numbers, what's happening in Gaza might actually outdo what was happening in Bosnia in 90s. So these are some of the similarities. But again, I think the root cause of all of this is whether we are willing to accept and recognize and acknowledge the other. And I'm afraid we have more and more people in our world today which don't just think that they are right. They think that they are right and no one else has the right to exist.
Islamic teachings emphasize compassion, coexistence, and the protection of all places of worship. Even during the war, this principle was upheld. Churches and synagogues across Bosnia remained safe, respected by those defending their land. In stark contrast, over 600 mosques were deliberately targeted and destroyed, erasing centuries of cultural and spiritual heritage.
I found out that, people can look this up, that even through all of the oppression and the aggression, that the churches here were safeguarded. Is that correct? In Sarajevo and in other places, that unlike the masjid, I believe over 600 mosques were just demolished, places of worship. But the churches, and it's just showing the respect, you know, because of Islam, you know, the sanctity of human life, unlike others who were killing innocent men, women, and children, safari hunting, they call it.
Right.
This is something that's prohibited in Islam.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, not a single town, nowhere, you know, maybe by the accident. But as you just mentioned, that our religion is not teaching us to do something like that, you know, to destroy the worship houses and stuff like that. But actually, they did it on purpose. Everywhere, as you just mentioned in Sarajevo, every single church, you know, every other different type of religion buildings, they were still standing. Nobody, I mean, they may probably got ruined out by grenades or whatever by the accident, but no one has ever, you know, attention to do something like that.
There have always been occasional violences, destruction of churches, mosques, and so on. But recently we had a study looking at the destruction and reconstruction and construction of mosques since 1880s. So century and almost century and a half. And what you see, yes, Balkan Wars, Second World War, there are some destructions of mosques, but nothing close to what happened in the 90s, when about 600-700 mosques were destroyed. So, which tells you that actually ethnic nationalism and its ideology and the forces who subscribe to it are actually more dangerous to our societies than anything else we have seen over the century.
So a Chetnik would qualify as a Christian, correct?
Yes, Christian.
So all Chetniks are Christians?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I just want to make this point that we don't blame Christianity because they were Christian, because they were truly following the way of Jesus, peace be upon them. They wouldn't be trying to annihilate a whole group of people just because they were Muslim, because they're told to love their neighbors.
But be honest with you, if they understand like religion they follow, you know, they don't want to be people like that, you know.
Yeah.
They don't want to kill to others. So this is like just... They follow the Christianity in a, like, tiny way, you know. Like,
in a tiny way, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, some actually, not even tradition. So those blamings is like now it's open for yeah. to do all this mess in a...
I bring this point up because they always try to associate Islam with anything that some person with Arabic name and they'll right away attack Islam. But we don't do the same thing. But they were Christian, but we don't blame Christianity.
Do you think that the Muslims are capable of doing what the Orthodox Christians did?
Jel ti misliš da bi muslimani mogu da su da bi imalo moguće da urade što su Srbi radili?
Nema. To je u islamu tuđe.
That's forbidden in Islam.
It's forbidden in Islam, da se osvrta.
But it's forbidden in Christianity too.
Islam je muslimani općenito u svijetu ne poznaju dobro islam. Islamu jula, vana jula alehi. Islam je po svojoj prirodi prirodan, blizak ljudskoj prirodi. I on nadvisuje mnoge ideje. Vana jula alehi, ništa ga ne može nadviziti.
We call this city, Sarajevo city, is a Jerusalem of Europe. You know, you see, we have churches here, synagogues, mosques. You know, just behind us is a church. This is a mosque. There is a synagogue there. My neighbor was Serb. When they would hide it in my basement, Serbs from their shelves. So when their shelf fell on their house, and if they were not in my bedroom, if they were not in my basement, their daughter would have been killed. So we protected them. We lived together. So this city is known for these things. It's not unusual for us. We don't need to hate somebody. We know who we are. And it's them who have to kill and hate to assert some identity or fulfill some crazy dreams and hate that they have.
There are mothers from Srebrenica area who have lost like 4 or 5 sons, husband, brothers, uncles, fathers, and so on. And they still say, while we cannot forget, we wish this never happens to anybody again. And they go with that message all around, and they went back. And they are still living with people who might be implicated in some of those crimes. Not necessarily, you know, the main war criminals, but they might have, in one way or the other, helped or at least help hide the crimes.
Bosnia's story is one of unimaginable loss, resilience, and a struggle for justice that continues to this day. It is a story that reminds us of the devastating cost of hate and the enduring power of hope. For the Bosnians, survival was not just about enduring war. It was about holding onto their identity, their faith, and their humanity against all odds. The scars remain etched into the land and the hearts of its people, but Bosnia also stands as a testament to the strength of the human spirit, a reminder that even in the face of annihilation, the will to rebuild, to forgive, and to persevere endures. As we reflect on this tragedy, let it be a warning, a lesson, and a call to action, to stand against hatred, to protect those who cannot protect themselves, and to endure that such horrors are never repeated.